And welcome back to the News Roundup on WCAI. I'm Sean Corcoran, and with me from the Cape Cod Times newsroom is Patrick Cassidy. He's a reporter at the Times and Cape Cod Online. Joining us on the phone is Nelson Siegelman, the managing editor at the Martha's Vineyard Times. Hello, Nelson.
Good morning.
Nelson, you're reporting this week that the Army Corps of Engineers is ready to dredge Menemsha Channel, but not all officials or even all governments are supportive of the idea. What's happening there?
Right. I'm sort of certain this fellow thought that people might say, oh, what a great idea. You're going to pay for it? But that's not really how it always works on Martha's Vineyard. So not everyone is on board with this for various reasons. The project would be a dredge project. They would dredge from the entrance of Menemsha Channel all the way up into Menemsha Pond. The project is authorized at a depth of 8 feet, but there was some talk of only going to 6 feet. And the Chilmark selectmen voted Tuesday not to endorse this. They are opposed to it for two main reasons. One is they're concerned about the effect on their scallop harvest. They had a very good scallop year this year and last year. And also they're concerned that if the channel is in fact dredged and made more navigable, larger boats would go up into Menemsha Pond and that would affect water quality. So those are really two things they're concerned about. It is a beautiful pond and they just think that at this point it's really not worth it to risk all of that. The Selectmen in Aquinnah are in favor. They think that dredging would, in fact, improve water quality in the pond, so they take a contrary view. And also the Wampanoag tribe of Gayhead Aquinnah supports this project. So at this point, we're not certain what's going to happen. The Army Corps said they're going to make a decision within the next few weeks because, as you can imagine, a dredge project takes a lot of permitting and staging. And they don't necessarily have to take the local view into account. They can decide to go forward, but they said they prefer not to do that. So at this point, it remains to be seen what will happen. And they said they'll consider all views.
And it was dredged previously in the 1970s, so this
wouldn't
be the first time.
Yes, in the early 70s, and right now they're shoaling in two parts. Chilmark thinks that the shoaling isn't, that they can handle part of what needs to be done. So that's one part of the discussion as well. Any boater that's ever gone into Menemsha knows that the current just rips through that channel, and it's not for the inexperienced, certainly, and larger boats couldn't run into some problems there, because once you enter that channel, if you've got the current going in, you're on your way. There's no really turning back until you get up into Menemsha Pond or you take a sharp left into Menemsha Harbor. So it'll be a challenge one way or the other.
Just out of curiosity, what's the water quality like up in that pond, if you know? I mean, is that any factor that the Army Corps or local officials are taking into account as far as flushing, or is that rip that you were just talking about enough?
Well, interestingly, they had a consultant, the Woods Hole Group, do a study of what the effect would be from dredging, and the Woods Hole Group determined that the effect really wouldn't be that great one way or the other. So that's another point that the Chilmark selectmen has made, that basically if it's not broken, don't fix it. The actual dredging won't change the water flow, the exchange rate greatly. Right now, it takes about a day and a half for the water to completely exchange in that pond, and that's not really going to be there won't be a huge difference once it was dredged. Mainly, the dredging would concentrate the flow into the channel, and the study said that in fact might help scallop propagation on some of the flats.
So Nelson, we're still here in the winter. It's February here, but I understand employers are already looking for summer help, and they're leaving the island to do it and going to far off places.
Yes, we have a story in this week's issue about the search for summer employees, and that begins overseas. Visitors to Martha's Vineyard would certainly be familiar with this. If you go into some of the markets or into the net result, fish market that's very popular in Vineyard Haven, they have tables where you can sit outdoors. Many of the employees are from overseas, mostly Eastern European countries. And we spoke with a number of employers, and they're quite happy with these kids. In all instances, we just heard wonderful stories. They're usually a college, foreign students. They can stay here longer than the American college students can, often into September. And they're here to work hard, earn some money, and see the USA. So right now, the various island businesses have begun looking for students, and most of them use agencies that place the kids here, so it works out pretty well.
Yeah, they come in on those J-1 visas that we've written about before. Nelson Siegelman, the managing editor of the Martha's Vineyard Times, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And on the phone is Patrick Cassidy, a reporter at the Cape Cod Times and Cape Cod Online. Patrick, we learned last week that two marijuana dispensaries will be placed on Cape Cod. Is that right?
Yes, we had two applications from businesses looking to locate here on Cape Cod, Medical Marijuana of Massachusetts and the William Noyes Webster Foundation, Inc. Were successful in securing licenses to operate here. Interestingly, there were no operations that succeeded on Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Though one of those organizations, Medical Marijuana of Massachusetts, has former U.S. Congressman William Delahunt as its president. They also received licenses for three other locations, Mashpee, Taunton, and Plymouth. So they were really the big winners, I guess, as far as getting these licenses. They plan to grow and process the marijuana for all three dispensaries on an industrial lot in Plymouth, and they'll operate the dispensary on the Plymouth property and then bring the product by armored car here to Taunton and Mashpee. So this interesting vision of every time you see an armored car, you think it's going to a bank, but in the future that could be an armored car filled with marijuana. Delahunt has said that he hopes that this the availability of medical marijuana will help fend off the prescription drug abuse. You know, others aren't so sure. There's a lot of questions still out there about this. One of the things that came up was the amount of money that was going to be made by these nonprofit groups. They have to be nonprofit to operate these businesses. And for nonprofit groups, you know, they're bringing in substantial money, a lot of which is going to the salaries for the top executives. Actually, in terms of nonprofits, it's not necessarily atypical for top executives to get pretty good salaries, but coupled with the controversy around marijuana, medical marijuana in general, it's raised some eyebrows.
I noticed on the editorial page of the Cape Cod Times this week, one of the letters was calling for former Congressman Delahunt to donate his salary to some sort of charity.
Yes, yeah, that's one option for him, I guess.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Congress come out and become a lobbyist and go into these types of businesses in order to donate your salary, but I guess that's up to him to decide.
Well, it's also kind of interesting that former Congressman Delahunt is now working with the Mashpee Wampanoag to help get them a casino in Taunton. And yeah. And Taunton is one of the places he's putting this dispensary, as well as Mashpee, obviously, where the tribe is from. It's kind of interesting.
I know our reporter George Brennan, who covers the tribe and the casino issue, has said that's the case as well, and that's kind of an interesting coincidence at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything more there? Who knows? It is one of these interesting connecting of the dots that you tend to wonder about.
There was, to just move this story forward a little bit, so Barnstaple, where does Barnstaple stand? Because they're actually now making a smaller pot district. I think you wrote a story about that in today's paper?
Yep, it was in today's paper. We had there was a meeting last night of the Barnstaple Town Council, and they passed a scaled-down zoning plan for medical marijuana dispensaries in town here. Originally, the zoning area was going to be around the hospital. This was about a year ago. They were one of the towns that installed a moratorium or established a moratorium for the dispensaries. Now they've come back. They're running up against a deadline where they really have to do something. And in this case, they decided to scale back a new plan even further so that it's just around Industrial Drive, which is an area where there's a lot of industry in Hyannis. So that new plan was approved by the Barnesville Town Council last night. I believe the planning board, which met jointly with them, did not approve it. They just couldn't come to a consensus on it. And again, this is another town now that has a zoning area. There are several that have done it. I think Yarmouth is in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Raises the question for me to a certain extent is, you know, some of the towns did it more quickly. Were some of these towns who did it later and established the moratoriums hoping maybe that, you know, the dispensaries would go somewhere else and they just bide their time? It's not clear. You know, we still have three more dispensaries that can be located here on the Cape, at least for the time being. So they can now look to Barnstable for one of those locations.
Let's talk about contaminated wells in Easthan. This is a story we've been following for quite some time now about contamination getting into some wells in that town where there is no town water. Now I understand that 30 town properties are using bottled water, and there's a very compelling story in the Cape Cod Times this week about the Easthan United Methodist Church and what they have to do to deal with this issue.
Yeah, this is the first property that serves the public that has to use bottled water. The others of those 30 properties are private homes. It's actually 34 households on 30 properties. And the reason for this is there is contamination that's been found of 1,4-dioxane that's been detected in the drinking water at 0.3 micrograms per liter, which is the standard for drinking water. So it's above that amount, and that means that folks have to use the drinking water at the Easthan United Methodist Church. That means that their spaghetti dinners and their coffee hours, they need to use bottled water to take care of those events. Which, when you're at home, it can be a burden. When you're serving 80 people, that can really start to add up, and you can imagine that the church is going to have to make some adjustments to deal with that. There is this ongoing issue up in Easthan where they're trying to put in a town water system, and some folks have said that they're against that. There was a plan, $40.8 million, that failed by about 7 votes to get the supermajority, which was needed during town meeting, to put in a water system. Town selectmen are now expected to come back with another plan this year. It seems like Groundhog Day at Easthan Town Meeting, where every year we come back with a new plan, and so far none of them have really been successful in addressing this issue.
Well, speaking of Groundhog Day, let's move to the other side of the Cape in Sandwich, where they're continuing efforts to protect Town Neck there. They're looking for some help with Town Neck, which continues to lose sand.
Yeah, town leaders in Sandwich are asking for a $5 million federal grant to rebuild the dune system at Town Neck Beach. That system has taken a real beating during storms over the past couple winters, and town officials have filed a application with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation's Hurricane Sandy Coastal Resiliency Grant Program. That's a great acronym, I'm sure. And they are looking to do a big project to really take care of the issue for a longer term. A lot of the work they've done so far is basically just putting Band-Aid on it. They've put sand on the area, and it's become what's essentially a sacrificial dune that then is just washed away. The town is also looking for $1 million from the Community Preservation Act and is chipping in another $260,000. That type of buy-in by the town apparently helps the application process and helps their chances in getting the application. Again, that area has become a point of contention between residents who want the town to do more to fix it and protect their properties, and town officials who in some cases have kind of said, well, it's not that the flooding that's potential there is not that going to be that bad. We don't think that your concerns are you know, valid in terms of how bad it's going to be. So there is this back and forth between residents and town officials. According to the application, the barrier beach that this would protect up to 600 homes and businesses, including the town's main fire and police stations, and property valued at $330 million. So that's nothing to sneeze at, certainly.
Sure. And regarding fire stations, there's a fire station in Hyannis that they say is dated and needs to be replaced. And I know you cover this issue. I thought the number had been significantly higher than where they are now in terms of what it'll cost to build a new station. What's been happening? They've been chipping away at that.
They have been chipping away at that, and it's come down to $19.8 million for the construction part of the project. That includes soft costs and the construction. It was originally $25.5 million last year when they first proposed what had been a 52,000 square foot building. The latest plans, which again have been worked on by the building committee and also have received a lot of input from the Greater Hyena Civic Association, which is very active on this subject, have it at 42,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Folks from the Civic Association, some of them say it's got to come down even further. At $19.8 million, it's a cost that they say is too high. They also say it doesn't that cost doesn't include money that the district has already approved, totaling $3.4 million to buy the land for the new station and for initial architectural and engineering work. So this is going to a district meeting March 5th. And, again, leading up to that, supporters and opponents of this are going to be making kind of their final pitches, if you will. The fire chief says, hey, we can't operate anymore in the station as it is. It's hard to argue that the station isn't dated and it isn't very crowded if you go out there and take a tour around. But the question is, what do you replace it with? Is it something that some have called, well, you don't want to put in a Taj Mahal? Again, the fire station, the fire officials say, well, we can't put in something that's not going to serve us for the next, 50 years. We got to plan for the future.
Right.
And we also are one of the busiest stations in the state, as a matter of fact. So it'll be an interesting debate at the district meeting on March 5th.
Patrick, we just have a couple seconds left here. I know you have another story about wastewater plan, a Cape-wide wastewater plan, and what that might cost, a new cost estimate. What is that estimate? And then people can go to the website to see the story to learn more.
Sure. It was $3 to $8 billion initially. It's now down to under $4 billion, according to the Cape Cod Commission. And there was a summit yesterday. There's a lot more on that in the paper and online.
All right. I want to thank my guest, Patrick Cassidy, a reporter at the Cape Cod Times. Join me from the Cape Cod Times newsroom. Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
You can follow Patrick at PCassidyCCT on Twitter. And thanks to our other contributors, WCAI's Brian Morris, Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle, Nelson Siegelman of the Martha's Vineyard Times, and Sally Rose of the Provincetown Banner. And I want to thank you for listening. This is WCAI. I'm Sean Corcoran.